This is the Authentic Persuasion Show. Hey everybody, Jason Cutter here. Welcome to part two of my conversation with Mr. Chuck Hester from A Purpose Partnership, among other things. Chuck, welcome to the after show of the Authentic Persuasion Show.
Nice to be here, Jason. Looking forward to this part.
So for people who didn't check it out, make sure to tune in, download the podcast, check out the YouTube video for part one. I've got Chuck here. We had a great conversation. So many things. I have so many notes and things I want to talk about. How was that part one for you in that conversation?
It was great. As I mentioned, it flew by. I mean, a measure of a really good conversation is when you're not looking at the clock going, oh wait, it's only 15 after or 16 after. We have all been on those Zoom calls, and as a podcaster as well, I've had those guests where it's like, so tell me about so-and-so, and they go, yep. And this was a really good, true-flowing conversation, and I've enjoyed having a conversation with you, man.
I'm glad. Yeah, nothing is worse than hosting a podcast or hosting a meeting where it feels like you're trying to get information out of a teenager who just doesn't want to share anything, and it's just absolutely miserable. So many things I want to talk about in our time here in the after show. Most important one, the most important question from part one that I know that everybody wants to know, MacGyver or the A-Team? Go.
Oh, dang. Most likely MacGyver, although you can tell from my hair, I never did a mullet. Don't have that. But I, golly, that's really hard, man, because A-Team was great, although I know a lot of background as to Papard and how he acted with other people, especially actresses. So, I'm going to go to A-Team. I really am.
Really?
Yeah.
So the MacGyver of Marcom saying A-Team, why, from a TV show, in the show, in the episode, why would you say A-Team versus MacGyver?
A lot more team dynamics, which frankly, come back to Adam and I a year from now, and we may end up being the A-Team of Marcom. You never know. That's not a bad idea, actually, to be able to work that through. There was always more interesting storylines, I think, somewhat, and... I'm a guy that looks at the TV series and go, okay, that's formulaic and we've done it five times. And, big fan of Jumping the Shark with Fonzie and why they did that and where it was going on. So I get bored with, I'm a writer by training. I'm a journalist, by training from USC. And so I look at the writing more sometimes than I do the acting, but the writing will carry it. You know, my favorite show of all time is The West Wing because of the walk and talk dialogue that occurred. So there you go. Longer answer.
Yeah, well, and I was a fan of both, but definitely more of a fan of A-Team. Still formulaic. All of those shows, most shows are, but there was something different about the whole team. But still in the same tone of what you said in the first part of why you call yourself the MacGyver of Marcom, which is just give me some limited resources and enough time, and I will figure out how to save the day in some way. And I love what you said about the A-Team. I won't ask for much of a royalty, but every time you use the A-Team of Marcom, right. just remember me.
And nobody understands for sure why the local townspeople in Arizona didn't think it was unusual that George Papard was wearing black gloves all the time. But
nobody knows. All right. So now that we got the most important topic, and I know that everyone on the show is absolutely wanting to know that. I have no idea because I don't know the demographic of everybody listening. Some people might be like, what's an A-Team? Hopefully you know who Mr. T is, but you never know. Let's talk about one of the things that you're also known for. You do a lot. I mentioned you on LinkedIn at the end of the show. You had mentioned it during, and the LinkedIn, the training, the coaching, the stuff that you do. What tips can you share right now? Because everybody in sales and business has the ability to use LinkedIn. Most people who are on LinkedIn have maybe a bad experience from time to time from people who treat LinkedIn as a different kind of a tool than it actually is. And, what's some of the highlight tips that people could do to be more effective on LinkedIn what they're up against?
The first one, because I work almost exclusively with executives. In other words, I'm not a job seeker LinkedIn coach. That's not who I am. I work one-on-one, customized to what they're trying to accomplish. I work with a lot of salespeople, VP of sales and up, and sales teams as well. One of the foundational things is that profile. If you don't have that profile set up in such a way that it's conversational, people understand it, it also reflects the branding that of the company that you work for or your company and what that looks like if you're inconsistent on it. You know, we go through, when I do my two one-hour sessions, basically, first is LinkedIn profile, SEO, what are we going to do with that? And the second part, which is my favorite, quite frankly, we talked about Bob, but Bob Berg's Know, Like, and Trust, and coming in and actually doing a, you know, a, here's a LinkedIn connection, you connect, and they go, okay, cool, here's my pitch. And, you know, there's no, I literally will come back on occasion if I get snarky, and I'll come back and say, first of all, I don't know you that well. I don't like you because I don't know you, and I don't trust you because I don't know you. So pitching me just causes me to do exactly what I'm about to do, which is disconnect with you. So it's about building relationships. It's all about, and you know, I've written blog posts and a book on this. It's a case of, you know, it's not about you. It's about the customer or the person that you're trying to touch. And it's, and the most important thing you can do is ask about them first and not try to tell them about you, which is a really hard thing for salespeople to do. They have a, you know, they have a manual, a Bible, whatever you want to call it, which is here's the pitch, and here's how you do, and here's how you overcome the objections when they start doing that or whatever. You know, I'm veteran enough to recognize almost all of that, and it's such a turnoff for me. When people come to me and say, hey, you know what, I really just want to get a chance to know you and introduce some people in my network, vice versa, love your content. That's great. I like that. The pitching is just the stuff that just drives me crazy. So, first pitch on that.
So the profile, and then obviously how they're approaching things. Bob Berg, who's a great guy, and the Go Giver's amazing. Know, like, and trust. Build those relationships. Fight the standard. I don't know where it keeps coming from and why it keeps perpetuating, but salesperson manual of reaching out and wanting to pitch. Going back to what I said in the first part, which is the relationships versus the number game, and people do. Where do you find that balance, though, with LinkedIn, like you just said? Because I get those messages all the time. So people say, I love your content, or I just want to build a relationship, and who can I connect you with? And many times that's just part of the playbook that they bought for LinkedIn, but then the pitch is coming soon. Maybe it's later that day. Maybe it's the next day that I'll get the full page LinkedIn message. Right?
I can promise you I've never bought services and connected with anybody, used somebody as a consultant who, sorry, choked me up in the process, who actually has done that. If they come back to me, they connect, hey, let's get to know each other, let's figure some time to have this type of conversation, see where we go. Could be 3 weeks, a month, a year before I actually engage with them. I use an example when I do my LinkedIn presentations of the guy next door who knocks on your door, a New York Life salesman. Hey, just moved into the neighborhood and want to buy insurance because I'm a neighbor now and you should buy insurance from me. We're connected on LinkedIn, you should buy insurance. As opposed to the guy who comes in and says, just moved in next door, I've got kids, so I want to know about schools, about shopping, do whatever. You're having a backyard barbecue a month or two later. Hey, Jason, I understand that, you know, you're insurance, and tell me more about what you do. And by the way, now's the time because I'm looking for an insurance person. I've gotten a chance to know you, like you, trust you. So I'm going to buy from you because you're a known entity to me. You're somebody that there aren't questions as to what that looks like. Put me in if I'm a part of a quota, I'm not going to talk to you. That's kind of the bottom line.
Yeah. I love that example, especially any long-term dedicated authentic persuasion show. It might even have been when the show was called the Sales Experience Podcast, which is going back a few years. I had a guest on the podcast who ran an insurance brokerage, and the title that we did for the show and his biggest mantra is don't be that guy at the barbecue. Literally is what he trains all of his insurance salespeople to do as well. Is don't be that person at the barbecue who's just pitching everybody that you just met. Like, build relationships and then play the long game. So it's an amazing tie-in, because I think what people don't realize is they may not do that in real life. And if they do, it's gross, but hopefully they don't. But then they get an online world and they're like, well, those rules are different because now I can just send messages and I can do this at scale or run automation. And I don't have to actually like worry about it. And I'll just play the numbers game, right? Back to what we're talking about.
And how ineffective. I'll give you good examples. You know, I've run into the situation because when I connect with somebody, and you've seen this, my first question is, how can I be of service to you? You'd be surprised the number of people that say, and what are you trying to sell by asking that question? And I always...
If it helps, that's what I thought when you did it to me. I was like, oh, this is consultant. They always want to sell stuff.
I have to explain that. The other part of that is, you know, in a book that I wrote was... treat your connection like they're standing right in front of you, because in general they are, especially these days, 2.5 years of Zoom calls. This is as close as we get sometimes to standing right in front of you. Understand that there's a person behind that social media status update, the digital email, whatever it may be. There's somebody that's a human. One of my favorite people, Brian Kramer, runs an organization called Human to Human, and it's all about human connection and being able to treat people like people. What a radical thought.
Yeah. Weird. Wild. So, total side note, but still LinkedIn related. Have you ever tried, because I know you've thought about it, I already know, have you ever tried to convert one of those gross instant pitching LinkedIn people into a program or a course to help fix that and reform them?
Well, my favorite is, two answers to that question. First of all, my favorite is when I get a LinkedIn invite and it says, you know, I can teach you how to use LinkedIn in such a way that you can get a lot of connections. I'm like, of course, first of all, you haven't read my profile. You have no idea what my content looks like. My LinkedIn tips are there. But yeah, I'm on a rare occasion, if I get snarky, and it's one of my favorite words, if I get a little snarky, I'll come back and say, well, you know what? I know a guy that can do a really cool program to teach you how to use LinkedIn effectively, because right now you're not. And that's kind of the bottom line. So...
Has anyone ever taken you up on that? Have you ever converted a wayward LinkedIn soul?
No, I have not converted, but what I've gotten back is, thanks for the advice. Nobody ever says that to me. You know, they just kind of either disconnect with me or don't give me a chance. The good salesperson is the one that comes back and says, I appreciate that information. That will help me do better. And I found a couple of those, and they become connections. So it can work out.
Yeah, and I've gone through periods of time where I've thought, I should build a course, or I need to do something to, like, help these people. Stop doing this and do this other thing, because this is never going to work, like, long term. Mm-hmm. And then I think that person doesn't, like, do they care, and is it worth fighting that fight every single time? Yeah. Probably the answer is yes. If we all did it, then it would obviously change it. So,
sure.
One of the other things that you'd mentioned in the first part that really resonated with me, and I just wanted to touch on again, is the fact that you're always learning, always open to new things. And you talked about now, for the first time in your career and your life and business, having a partner in Adam, who's going to be on the show here soon enough, but like being open to that and learning from your clients. And has that always been the case for you? Has that been something you've developed over time? Is that something that's happened with maturity? Because, you know, for me, the sales success traits that I have, which I think are applicable in life as well, the first two are openness and curiosity, which is basically what you're talking about, right? Yeah. Being open and learning. Talk about that. Has that always been your thing as a writer and a journalist? Or is this...
My generation has been, the best example, my father worked for Westinghouse for 42 years, did not understand when I moved from one marketing firm to another within a year. What did you do wrong? What's the problem there? What does it look like? We as a generation, I'm talking about the boomers, and I'm talking for myself or anything else, are really kind of stuck in our ways. This is the way we've always done it type of attitude that we have. I've learned... over the years, and probably most recently 10 to 15 years ago, or even 5 years ago, really good leaders that have come to me. One of the first things I learned was, don't come to me with the problem, come to me with the problem and the solution. That's kind of the bottom line. But the other thing was, I lean on Adam on this occasionally, because he's the left brain guy that can do Excel wonders and spreadsheets and all kinds of cool stuff. He's the second person. But I had a leader that came to me, and I came to him and said, I don't know how to do this, and this doesn't make... And all he said to me directly was two words. He said, Google it and understand it. And it was one of the biggest lessons in my 40s, 50s that I've ever had, which is, hey, you know what? Go figure it out, and at least try to find out. And if you can't, then come back to me. I can help you out. Because if you rely on whomever to go fix that spreadsheet for you, you'll never be able to learn it. So, yeah, it's been a process for me, quite frankly. I'm a little set in my way sometimes, and we all have the egos that we look at. But, you know, I'm an avid reader. I'm an avid documentary person, love movies, all of that stuff. So I'm always looking for the cool things, and I'm a trivial guy like you would not believe. And the third aspect of my brand, which we haven't talked about, is I'm a dad joke aficionado and do a daily chuckle on Facebook every day. But, you know, anyway, long story short, yeah, I'm and has honestly, and this is maybe a lesson for the audience as well, it has a lot to do with the leadership that is allowing you to learn. There's a difference of, hey, let's go figure this out. Here's some seminars you can look at. You know, take some time and do that. There's a difference between, Jason, there's a seminar on how to do Excel spreadsheets. Go do it. And there's a seminar on Excel spreadsheets. And when you're done, I want you to come back and walk me through and tell me what you learned. Totally different, because you're going to pay attention to that seminar in a different way, as far as it goes. So, longer answer to the question, I guess.
No, that's perfect. And like, what resonates so much with me is the same thing I tell people all the time, is that you can make yourself into whoever you want. Obviously, you have your core strengths, and we all have our personalities, and you can't totally make a square peg into a round peg, but there's these kind of things that you can develop. Like you even said, like, that isn't a generational thing. It's not necessarily where you were. And then you've made yourself into that. That's why I tell people they can make themselves into a sales professional. You can make yourself more open and more curious and more creative and those kind of things that you're talking about. And I love then the tie-in with leadership, which is, if you have the right leaders and people around you, not just the leaders above you, but the people in your life that are encouraging you, then you'll realize, wait a second, I can do that. I want to do that. I want to figure things out and be open and curious, instead of, this is the way we've always done it, or this is what I do and I don't care about your input,
right?
Because then you're just going to limit yourself. So I love it. I think that's great. Chuck, once again, thanks for being on the show. Thanks for part one. For people who didn't tune it in, tune into that one. If you haven't listened to it, if you haven't watched it yet, make sure you find it on podcasts, on YouTube. It's everywhere. I got Chuck Hester here. If you want to find out more about him and what he and Adam are doing, which again, Adam Sinkis is going to be on the podcast here soon, then make sure to check out apurposepartnership.com. And then also, of course, we were talking about LinkedIn. You can find Chuck Hester, H-E-S-T-E-R, on LinkedIn, of course. And make sure you don't send him a gross connection request. If you heard him here on the podcast, send something and reference the show. And then please don't pitch him anything and make me look bad or make me feel bad about it. So, again, Chuck, thanks for being on the show.
Absolutely. I'll give you the script. When you send me a LinkedIn invite, folks, all you got to do is say, Chuck, you were on the podcast and you rocked. And I will definitely answer that one. For sure.
There we go. That's all it takes. And again, you don't have to make a LinkedIn connection request very long or crazy, just customized and personal and actually mean it. And it will resonate more times than not. So thanks again for being on here. Thanks everyone for tuning in. Until next time, keep selling with authentic persuasion.